evening, he said, his voice cracking all over the microphone. Hi, welcome to the program tonight. Thanks for dropping by. Hey, last night, I forgot to mention it. George in Oregon sent me an email last night pointing out that on last night's NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, for some reason, in one of the segments about, what was it about? Was it about North Korea? Was it about Sotomayor's nomination for the Supreme Court? I forget. But the point George was trying to make was that NBC Nightly News had as part of its segment on her appointment, I'm assuming it was about her appointment, comment from Limbaugh, from the pig man. They had a piece of video from his website. The pig man now is an NBC commentator? Well, that was last night. Tonight, George writes, Mike, our hero Brian and the whore NBC News gave the pig man, who apparently really is the Republican leader, more airtime again today on what passes for the evening news. It sure is obvious who owns and controls what used to be the mainstream broadcast media. They're quite a platform for what's left of the Republican Party, aren't they? Irrelevant Dick Cheney was given time to comment on the North Korean Looney Tunes situation, too. They really are a parody of what they used to be. Little bits of truth embedded in gobs of propaganda, with Nazis like Limbaugh and war criminals like Cheney being given all the airtime they want to spread their lies and garbage with little time left for anything useful. It's time to climb out of the garbage can. But how? George in Oregon. Yeah, I couldn't believe that. I just about choked on my orange roughy tonight. We were at dinner, and I did a bad no-no. I had the NBC Nightly News on during dinner and saw the pig man offering up comment on NBC News. Really? Jesus Christ, Brian, you work for NBC News. You have millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of budget. You have to go to the pig man? Ah! Now, in defense of NBC News, what the pig man said was stupid beyond belief, A. B, the video feed that they had taken from his website, of course, as those sorts of video feeds often do, stopped while the voice track kept going. And it stopped at a point where the pig man has his large head kind of back and his large mouth kind of open. And the net effect is what you would expect to see a sow in a pen somewhere screaming her guts out. It was very, very bizarre. So, who's to know whether NBC is trying to promote the Republican Party and its dear leader, the pig man, or are they trying to kill the Republican Party by allowing it to parody itself? Don't know the answer. The the right wing is going nuts over Judge Sotomayor. Aren't they? They're just going crazy. They cannot see. She was appointed to the federal judiciary by the first Bush. She was nominated or appointed to the then confirmed to the federal appellate bench by Clinton. The right wing nutballs, the usual gang, Ann Coulter and the pig man and Laura Ingraham and Hannity and the rest of these brain dead jackasses. Have nothing to attack. I have yet to hear them attack any of her rulings. But they have gone after one sentence out of, one would assume, thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of sentences that has come from Judge Sotomayor's mouth. But one sentence, and you know what sentence that is. We're going to get to it a little bit later. But Amy in Minneapolis writes, Mike, yesterday, driving and spinning the AM dial, Laura Ingraham was kvetching about Obama's pick for the Supreme Court. After trashing Sonia Sotomayor, Laura Ingraham followed with bumper music of Cesaria Evora's Cabo Verde album with this song, Chinchirote, supposedly mocking Sonia's ethnicity. Quite the beautiful melody, but the parody long lost because the music is not of Spanish origin, but Portuguese. Not only is the wicked right smarmy, they're dumb to boot. Amy from Minneapolis. Oh, yeah. I mean, the right-wingers are, as a group, if you got 10 of them together, I mean, take a look at the last CPAC convention in Washington, D.C., where the pig man bounced and jiggled his boobies all around the podium. Remember that? Boom, 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 boom. Scanning through the audience looking for some 14 or 15-year-old that he might entertain later on the evening. Boom, 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 boom. Remember that? Boom, 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 boom. In his Disco Dave outfit. But if you get a pack of these people together, the collective IQ, I don't know, might be 200. If you had 10 of them together, I'm serious, beyond their ability to snark and bitch and complain and make stuff up and lie and cheat and steal and support terrorism and torture and murder and mayhem and war, beyond that, they're lost. And I'll tell you what, if someone were to tomorrow take away from these right-wing radio talk show hosts, all of them, the Republican Party talking points that comes out every morning at 8 o'clock in the morning and is blast faxed to everybody, including Drudge, including to Drudge. If they were to take away, they being, I don't know, some sky spook, were to reach down and go, snatch, and rip from their bony little hands or their pudgy little hands the Republican Party talking points, do you know what would happen in this country? The air would clear. Radio stations would go silent. You could hear birds chirp. Children laugh. The sky would be blue. And there would be a rainbow from coast to coast, border to border, across the fruited plain. Original, these punk asses are not. Bad news from Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Very bad news. They have the post commanders have ordered a stand down starting today. It takes a very critical situation in the military to order a stand down. That's where everything stops. Everything ceases. All regular duties suspended for 3 days now at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, because soldiers at that base lead the Army in suicides this year. And the commanders are saying they want to identify and help soldiers who are struggling with the stress of Bush and Cheney's murderous adventures in Iraq and Afghanistan. Apparently, it is this group of soldiers that is most at risk for killing themselves. Now, these are young men, for the most part. There are young women in the 101st Airborne, I guess. And I don't know. I'm of a generation that I still consider, when I think of soldiers, I'm sorry to the women in uniform. I don't mean any offense by this, but I still consider, when I think of soldiers, I have to stop and think, well, it's not just men anymore. I have been told, or I think I've read someplace, that women are still denied combat roles. From what I've seen on the electric TV, that's not necessarily true. Women in uniform have been forced to pick up weapons or to swing a turret gun around or to open fire because she and her group were under attack. So, you know, I don't know anymore. But the young men and women at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, are at extreme risk for suicide. It's got to be a reason why. More on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. When you keep driving and singing that same old funny song, and you can't tell me which way to go. Up 3 times 7 and then some more. You can't tell me, hey, like a dull knife that just ain't cutting.
boom, boom, boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk, and you talk that talk. You knocks me out off of my feet.
21 past the hour. Bang, 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 bang. All right, the stand down at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, that goes into effect today and will last for 3 days. It is being done so soldiers can focus on suicide prevention training. So far, there have been 11 confirmed suicides at Fort Campbell this year. More deaths are being investigated as possible suicides. One estimate is as many as 23 soldiers stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, have this year committed suicide. Brigadier General Stephen Townsend said, quote, "This is not a place where Fort Campbell and 101st Airborne Division want to be. We don't want to lead the Army in this statistic," end quote. From January to March, Fort Campbell averaged one suicide per week, Townsend said. And then after an Army-wide suicide prevention campaign that began in March, there were no suicides for 6 weeks, according to General Townsend. He said, quote, "But last week we had two in a week." So in a series of addresses this week, Townsend is going to speak to each of the approximately 25,000 soldiers assigned to the division. And today, and you may have seen some of this on your evening news, he addressed about 4,000 soldiers and said that the suicides must stop. I'm not sure. Is that a direct order? Soldier, you will not kill yourself. I mean, what is that? I'm not trying to be a smartass here. I'm just saying. Suicides must stop is what he told the soldiers. Okay, well, General, the quickest way for that to stop, of course, would be to, of course, the general does not have this power, but would be for Congress to immediately stop funding the two murderous enterprises that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld entered into 7 years ago. Wouldn't you think? Huh? Wouldn't you think? If the Democratic members of the House and the Senate were serious about the deaths and suicides and murder and mayhem and civilian deaths and children being blown to pieces, all they have to do is stop funding it. And then notify the president, we're not going to fund the slaughter any longer. Slaughter of our people, slaughter of their people. It's over, Mr. President. But you see, the Democratic Party is populated by a bunch of goddamn cowards, sneaks, pants sweaters, and as Bart Kopp calls them, a pink tutu Democrats. And Barack Obama, I don't know about him. I guess once you assume power and you realize the power of the presidency, and you start to realize how much power you have, well, hellfire. I mean, directing combat operations into areas of the planet where there is mayhem and murder going on. Maybe that's some kind of a rush. I don't know. Army leaders have been developing new guidance for commanders to help with this rising suicide rate. Across the Army, suicides from January through March rose to a reported 56. 22 confirmed, 34 still being investigated and pending confirmation. And the Army has said that soldier suicides reached the highest rate on record just last year. And if it stays on the course it's on now, 2009 will be another record-setting year for suicides. Parents, when you think of, when your kid comes to you, usually it's your son, when he comes to you and says he wants to join the military, you have to tell them no. I mean, you have to. What is the military now except another organization that works at the behest and command of corporate America? Nobody has attacked this country. No state has attacked this country since when? 1941? December 7th? 15 Saudis and four other people from three different countries in the Middle East, if you want to believe the official story, bombed New York and killed 3,000 people, bombed the Pentagon and got 60, 70, 80 more, and crashed an airplane in Pennsylvania, if you want to believe the official story. But for 68 years, nobody has attacked this country. And, of course, there's a reason for that, I guess, because we are nuclear-armed to the max, and I think anyone who would attack us understands any state that would attack us. I'm not talking about freelance bombers or cutthroats or brigands. I'm talking about no state, not North Korea, not Cuba, not Russia, not China. Nobody dare attack the United States. So the way to end the suicides is to get the soldiers out of the military. And the way to get the soldiers out of the military is when your 17 or 18-year-old comes to you and says, well, this is a way for me to get college credits. Explain to him it is not a way for him to get, I'm sorry, money for college. It is not. It's a way for him to have half his head shot off or to become psychologically deranged for the rest of his life or to be killed someplace that he really shouldn't be. I mean, you have to start taking responsibility to stop people from joining the military.
Hide my head, I want to drown my sorrow. No tomorrow, no tomorrow. And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. In the face of this horrendous rise in soldier suicides, the Marine Corps is also reporting. These numbers are going off the chart. According to our military affairs correspondent, Sharon, they only started keeping records of soldier suicides around 1980, I believe. And this year is on track to exceed the record set last year, which I think was 163. Military suicides. Fort Campbell, Kentucky leaders have asked soldiers on the post to look out for each other. Which, as anyone knows who has served in combat, of course I have not, but have had long conversations with people who have. When you're in a combat situation, you're fighting for your buddy. You're fighting for the person next to you. Mom and apple pie and the flag and the Constitution and Obama or Bush or Rumsfeld have nothing to do with it. So they've asked soldiers to pair up. They have come up with a battle buddy system, they're calling it. Look out for each other, they're being told. Unit leaders are also reviewing and updating lists of soldiers who may be at risk for suicide. And are reminding them they can seek help from resources such as a chaplain or a hospital. Of course, what they're leaving out here is in the gung-ho hoo-ha military, you don't show that kind of, quote, weakness, end quote. You don't dare do it. Because if you do, the very same unit commanders who are recommending that you do seek help will make sure that your ass really pays if you have the absolute temerity to declare, especially if you're in the Marine Corps. If you're in the 101st Airborne and you're going to go to the chaplain and say, Chaplain, I'm feeling a little bit queasy about all this. I think I might be having a nervous breakdown. What do you suppose the unit commanders and the buddies are going to say to that? Army officials say many soldiers are afraid that seeking help for these issues will hurt their career or make them appear weak to their fellow soldiers. But General Townsend, General Townsend, Brigadier General Stephen Townsend of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, is urging soldiers to speak up. Okay. We're talking for the most part here about young people, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 25, 27, who may be suicide prone before entering the service. And once they are in the service and have whatever defense mechanisms that worked so well in civilian life stripped completely away from them, they'd be even more prone to committing suicide, especially if they do a tour into a battle zone, and maybe a second one or a third one, but just the first one usually is just about all that's needed. From what I've been able to research, these are not battle-hardened soldiers that are committing suicide. These are people that are returning from their first tour. So is the military making people commit suicide, or are they suicide-prone before they go in? Is doing what they are instructed to do once they get to Iraq or Afghanistan contributing? Is it a stew, a toxic, filthy stew of all three? Probably the latter. If you have children of military age, you've got to ask yourself, as a parent, I had to confront this when my son Chris wanted to join the Navy. And with combined efforts, my efforts and my brother-in-law at the time, who was a Navy lieutenant, not JG, lieutenant, two tours in Vietnam, and we sat him down and talked him out of it, told him it was insane. Because the military is not what the commercials and the ads and the hoorah is all about. The military is an arm of corporate America. That's all it is. I defy you to show me otherwise. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a veteran. I don't care if what war you served in. You know the number here. The United States military, in all of its manifestations, with the possible exception of certain units in the United States Coast Guard and the National Guard, are instruments of corporate America. And they're there for one reason and one reason only: not to defend this country, not to fight for mom, the flag, and apple pie, but to defend the interests of corporate America, no matter what it takes. Now, if you don't believe that, then again, as I have 1,000 times in this program, I refer you to General Smedley Butler, who I've identified as the only soldier ever to receive two Congressional Medals of Honor, but I've been informed that, no, there were several men. Then let me rephrase it and say, was he perhaps the first? I really don't give a damn. He got two Congressional Medals of Honor. And his famous essay, War is a Racket, can be found with any internet search engine. If you have a son or a daughter that's thinking about joining the military, please just get on your computer and get War is a Racket by General Smedley Butler. It was written a long time ago, back when the United States was starting to get involved in empire. And read what he had to say. General Smedley Butler, two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner. Shifting gears quickly before I just don't want to do the program tonight. It's astonishing that this country is so willing to take its young people, lie to them, describe the glory and the honor and the patriotism that at one time did flow from serving in the military, without explaining to the young people the horror of what they're doing now. If they take a weapon, go through basic, get assigned to a unit, and go to one of these theaters of war. The horror of what... There is no honor here any longer. Someone explained to me the honor in sending a force into a country that's done nothing to us to destroy and kill and torture and all the terrible things that occur in war. Where is the honor in that? Somebody, goddammit, anybody Tell me where the honor is. Where is the glory? We have some here in Georgia. You know, this is kind of a double-edged sword. We have our politicians down here, whether they are local, all the way down to county commissioners or to the General Assembly, the state legislature, or up to the people we elect in the state to go to Washington, are clowns, jerks, weird asses, nutballs. On the one hand, they're extremely entertaining. So the attraction of these freaks is to watch them dance. It's unbelievable. The downside to that, the other side of the sword, is the fact that they are useless, worthless, accomplish nothing. The latest two examples, of course, Kathy blogged about this today at MikeMalloy.com. Representative Paul Brown is one of them, B-R-O-U-N, Republican. He was on Fox and Friends yesterday talking about his proposal to have Congress officially designate 2010 as the year of the Bible. And he had an interesting rationale for that.
Well, it's all about freedom, actually. The Bible was the basis of our laws, is the basis of the Constitution of the United States, the Declaration of Independence. The Bible was the founding source. In fact, our founding fathers quoted the Bible more than any other resource when they established this country. And we've forgotten that. We need to go back to those principles that the Bible teaches of things such as personal responsibility and accountability and freedom.
I'll leave it up to you to find as many lies and half-assed comments in that quotation from Representative Brown as you choose to find. But this nutball Brown thinks the government under Barack Obama is becoming a godless Marxist state where nobody will have private property or freedom or rights. The only way to save us from this horrible fate is to make 2010 the year of the Bible. Ironically, Satan Obama would have to actually sign this into law, but that fact escapes this lunatic. Unless it was just a congressional resolution, a sense of the Congress, I believe they call it. The morons on Fox News, what was it, on Fox and Friends? Yeah. Asked what kind of obstacle Brown was facing in getting Congress to approve the proposal to name 2010 the year of the Bible. We'll share that with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Shout the last word. Put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ. That's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down. I want to hear you.
Talk radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. 10 before the hour. So we're talking about Representative Paul Brown, a Republican nutbag from Georgia here, who wants the Congress to officially designate 2010 the year of the Bible. Yeah, we really do need this, don't we? This will make everything okay. Well, of course, he's on Fox and Friends this morning. So after introducing his idea to the saucer-eyed freaks on that network, one of the friends asked what kind of obstacles Brown was facing in getting Congress to approve this proposal. Listen to this. The longer he rambles, the more manic and insane he sounds. I got to get out of here.
Well, Steve, a lot of people look at this and they think it's all about just Christian activism. I am a Christian, but the Bible was the basis of our nation. And as we look to the future, as we deal with economic problems, as we're stealing our grandchildren's future, we need to look at the principles that were taught biblically. When our founding fathers established this country, they established it on freedom.
Amen.
That's what the Bible teaches.
Hallelujah.
Every single one of our laws are based upon biblical precepts.
Amen.
And we need to turn back to those precepts. If our country is going to be strong and great again,
yeah,
it's absolutely critical for us to understand what freedom's all about,
yeah,
what our own responsibility is all about, and what government's function within our society is
sure
supposed to be. And
yeah,
we have forgotten that in Washington. We're heading down a road that's going to destroy our nation. We're headed
yeah
towards a total government control of everybody's lives,
yeah,
a loss of freedom, loss of our money, loss of our private property. And it's extremely critical now for us to go back to those foundational
yeah
principles
oh, yeah
that this country was founded upon. That's the reason a proclamation of the year of the Bible will help people to understand what the importance of those principles all about as we go forward to make our nation secure, free, and great again. Thank y'all. God bless you. Thank you.
Oh, my God. We're heading down a road that's going to destroy our nation, you know, because Obama is a Nazi and he is reinstating the Hitler Youth. We are headed towards a total government, a loss of freedom. No, that's what you get when you join one of these blood cults like your religion, Paul. Your religion is based on death. It's based on suffering. It's based on pain. It's based on fear. When you join your religion, Paul, you get nothing but anguish and superstition and fear. Is that what you call freedom, you nut? Oh, my God. Again, how many distortions of fact can you find in that guy's minute and 27-second mini-sermon? They're just endless. We're stealing our grandchildren's future. Actually, nutbag, we are stealing our sons and daughters' future by sending them to go fight and die in a place that never threatened us. I bet you're a big, strong supporter, aren't you, Paul, of sending out them American troops go over there and take freedom and Jesus to the heathen, right? My God. That's where he's, Representative Paul Brown, who is one of the more articulate members of the Georgia congressional delegation, believe it or not. Brown, last November, he got, according to, what is this, Crooks and Liars? I'm not sure. But he won lots of friends on both sides of the aisle and in the White House when he warned that Obama was preparing a Hitler-like dictatorship with his civilian youth corps proposal. This is what he said, quote, "That's exactly what Hitler did in Nazi Germany, and it's exactly what the Soviet Union did. When he's proposing to have a national security force that's answering to him, that is as strong as the U.S. military, he's showing me signs of being a Marxist." A bunch of kids cleaning up highways, working in roadside parks, as strong as the U.S. military. You crazy son of a bitch. Why don't you people look? I'll tell you what, not to make light of a critical situation. The military is suffering an awful lot of suicides. You know what I'm saying? Representative Brown, why don't you step up to the plate like a man and take the place of one of those soldiers, huh? Why don't you do that, you idiot? Oh, my God. The Bible is our... No, I don't think the Bible is the founding source of government in the United States or this country, you moron. I think a combination of the way certain Native American tribes conducted their business and the way the ancient Greeks experimented with democracy and the Roman idea of empire, you know, there's a lot of borrowing, but The only place that the founders of this country followed the biblical model was in slaughtering the people that were here first. Now that, Representative Brown, you can find in Exodus. I think it's Exodus. Yeah, in Exodus. When after wandering in the desert in the Sinai for 40 years, Moses finally led the tribes to the Promised Land. It was just right over there across the Jordan River. But, damn, there's always a catch, right? Moses couldn't go, but Joshua could, his son, but he had to go with God's directive. Go on over there into the land of Canaan, and I want you to kill everybody. Slaughter them. Pregnant women, fetuses, babies, cattle, goats, men, women, children, sheep, asses, everything. Slaughter them. Burn them. Destroy them. So on that basis, Representative Brown, yeah, that's kind of the basis on which this country was founded. Of course, that's not taught in the history books. Not like that.
Did you catch the...
It is 6:30 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. By the way, Bob writes in about the chat room at MikeMolloy.com. He says, when you get a chance, please plug the chat room and the website. I think most people don't realize it's up and running. Yeah, if you are a Molloy podcast subscriber, is that right, Kathy? Go to MikeMolloy.com and do the appropriate logging in. And get active. Bob is there waiting for you. Say hi, Bob. Just go to MikeMolloy.com. We just started this win yesterday. You had to have been paying attention to pick that out of the rest of the program that the Molloy community is now open. And why don't you open your mic and explain it? Because I have a hard time operating a handheld computer. So if you want to explain it.
It's like Facebook for all your Molloy truth seekers out there. Everyone who would like to communicate, upload pictures, chat, put links up, blog.
They can do all that at our site.
All that. Isn't it just amazing? I love it.
Oh, that's why we're paying our webmaster $50 a month. I knew there was a reason. So check it out. Go to MikeMolloy.com. Log in. You have to be a subscriber to do this. This is a good time to suggest that you become a podcast subscriber. If you're not, it'll cost you 25 cents a program. Let's break it down further. 8.3 cents per hour. Whew. All right. Getting too far off topic here. There is an abundance of craziness tonight. And, see, this is where I wish I could be more like the Hartman program or even Stephanie. Stephanie, who is just lively and happy and still gets her point across. Or Hartman, who is very professorial and knows what he's talking about. But, you know, he has guests and it's not all, bleak and dark on either of those programs. Whereas on this one, the next chapter, and this is kind of a P.S., a postscript to what has gone down over the past couple of weeks. This is the Dateline. This is London today. And it's from the Reuters news agency. Photographs of Iraqi prisoner abuse, which U.S. President Barack Obama does not want released, include images of apparent rape and sexual abuse. That's according to Britain's Daily Telegraph newspaper. The images. What's the date today? Is this the 27th? Yeah, this is tomorrow's paper. The Daily Telegraph reports on Thursday, tomorrow. The images are among photographs included in a 2004 report into prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib, conducted by U.S. Major General Antonio Taguba. Now, remember, Taguba was asked to resign, remember? Huh? By the Bush crime family? Taguba included allegations of rape and sexual abuse in his report, and on Wednesday he confirmed to the Daily Telegraph that images supporting those allegations were also in the file. Taguba, who retired in January 2007, was quoted as saying in the newspaper, quote, "These pictures show torture, abuse, rape, and every indecency," end quote. He said he supported Obama's decision not to release them, even though Obama had previously pledged to disclose all images relating to abuses at Abu Ghraib and other U.S.-run prisons in Iraq. General Taguba said, quote, "I'm not sure what purpose their release would serve other than a legal one. The sequence would be to imperil our troops when we most need them, and British troops who are trying to build security in Afghanistan. The mere depiction of these pictures is horrendous enough. Take my word for it," end quote. General Antonio Taguba. "These pictures are horrendous enough, take my word for it." The newspaper said at least one picture, well, I'm not going to say that. Other pictures are said to depict sexual assaults with objects including a truncheon, wire, and a phosphorescent light tube. Oh, boy. Yeah, join the military and earn money for your college degree. Learn a skill. Learn a trade. Our military has been totally co-opted, poisoned, and destroyed by corporate America. And corporate America's whores in government. If you can kind of put your mind in the Wayback Machine for just a second, remember Clarence Thomas hearings, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. He was nominated by George Herbert Walker Bush, and the first President Bush so famously said that Clarence Thomas was the best possible choice in all of America. Clarence Thomas, at his hearing, of course, it turned out that he was kind of a pervert who really dug pornography and made all kinds of nasty remarks to Anita Hill. And more or less just whatever. We don't have to revisit it. But Clarence Thomas turned out to be a real pig. And I think it all came out, a sexist pig. It all came out in the hearings that were conducted back in the late 80s. Was it late 80s? Early 90s? But George Herbert Ferbert Bush insisted that Clarence Thomas was the best possible selection. And Clarence Thomas said, you know, he was being subjected to a public lynching. He played the race card almost immediately. He also talked about his experiences as a black Ute growing up over here on in not far from coastal Georgia, near Savannah, Georgia. A bum ticket or a flea bite or whatever the hell the name of the little town was. It was affirmative action. And of course, Clarence Thomas was the first to acknowledge that affirmative action that got his ass out of Georgia and into some place that made a little more sense and eventually landed him as a nominee for the Supreme Court. But during those hearings, all Clarence Thomas talked about was his own personal experience and how that weighed heavily on his time as a judge, the decisions he made, and so on and so on and so on and so on, right? Sonia Sotomayor, who has been nominated to the Supreme Court by Barack Obama, back in a lecture at University of California, Berkeley in 2001, probably about the time when John Yoo was still teaching there and hadn't been moved into the Bush crime family to figure out how to legalize torture. Judge Sotomayor, referring to former Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's saying that, quote, a wise old man and a wise old woman will reach the same conclusion in deciding cases, end quote. Sandra Day O'Connor said that. Soon-to-be Supreme Court Justice Sotomayor said, quote, I would hope that a wise Latina woman, with the richness of her experiences, would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life. Now, never one to miss a beat, this piece of human waste, Newt Gingrich, this afternoon wrote on his little Twitter page, quote, imagine a judicial nominee said, quote, my experience as a white man makes me better than a Latina woman, end quote. New racism is no better than old racism, unquote. Oh, my God. in the first place, in this society, Newt, only white people can be racist. Racism is actually a legal term, institutional racism. I can't think of a time in American history, Newt, when you would have been denied a seat on a bus or membership in a club or the right to join an integrated group of soldiers and go kill Germans. But black folk in this country do have those memories, and Latina or Latino or Hispanic people have the same memories. And what she said, I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences, hello, would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life. Think for a moment, because Gingrich won't, Laura Ingraham won't, and the rest of the, Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh won't, but think what that sentence says. I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life. We'll talk a little more about it when we come back. Stay with us. Wide open.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
On what used to be solid. 21 past the hour. Nobody was ever gonna get sized. Only a white male of Newt Gingrich's age and background would not understand what Sonia Sotomayor was trying to say when she said, I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life. The tendency for me anyway is to break it down and spoon feed it to the serial adulterer. Newt Gingrich, this white man who has never experienced a goddamn thing in his life that wasn't pretty much handed to him. He's been on the public, at the public trough, slopping and eating for probably all of his adult life. He grew up on military installations. He never served in the military, but his father did, or his stepfather did. So just about every piece of food that ever went into his mouth was paid for with taxpayer money. His schooling was paid for by taxpayers. He worked as a college professor at a public university, more taxpayer money. Was a member of Congress, Speaker of the House, until he had to resign in shame, more taxpayer money. So for Newt Gingrich to try to stack his white man experience up against any person of color, any place on earth, and declare himself equal to or better than, or even worse, to declare that the statement comparing her experiences and his is somehow racism is just breathtakingly dumbass comment. I mean, it really is. But again, Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh and the rest of these pigs have absolutely nowhere to go with this nomination. Nowhere to go. In the first place, after kind of a half-assed attempt to con Spanish-speaking people in this country into becoming Republicans, that went over real well, didn't it? How's that going for you, boys, huh? Having tried to convince any people of color to or any racial makeup other than white to join the Republican Party has been another huge bust. Ask Michael Steele, who thinks he is going to rap talk his way into convincing black folk, really, Michael, into joining Republican after all these failures. The white right in this country is now faced with a body slam from Barack Obama. A female Latina woman. Let's not even look at the fact that she graduated second in her class at Princeton. I think she graduated summa cum laude with highest praise. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs advised that people involved in the debate over her nomination should be careful with their language. He said, quote, "I think we're satisfied that when the people of America and the people of the Senate get a chance to look at more than just the blog of a former lawmaker, that they'll," that would be Gingrich, "that they'll come to the same conclusion that the president did. I think when people get a chance to look at her record, I feel certain that partisan politics will take a back seat to common sense and open-minded decisions based on a full examination of her record. And I think that's what every Supreme Court and every judicial nominee deserves," end quote. Well, that's nice, Robert, and I'm glad you are still treating Republicans as if they were more than 30% human. Or cared a tinker's damn about this country. That's nice. It's nice that you can do that. It's nice that Brock can do that. And Eric Holder and the rest of you folks, you just continue treating these subhumans as though they had equal footing where it concerns genetic distribution of human genes. Gibbs also added, after he mentioned that Sotomayor was highly qualified and of keen intellect, Gibbs added, quote, "I've heard a lot of people in the last couple of days. They mention intellect. I'm not entirely sure where people that make that argument, what number they graduated in their class at Princeton, but my sense is it's not second," end quote. Touché. Touché, dumbasses. That's French. And again, Sotomayor was appointed as a judge on the U.S. District Court in Manhattan by George Herbert Werbert Bush in 1992 and went to the appellate court. Clinton appointed her in, what, 93? No, later on in the 90s. Oh, yeah, Republicans also seized on comments Sotomayor made at a Duke University Law School panel 4 years ago, saying these remarks show she is a liberal activist. Are you ready? Quote, "All of the legal defense funds out there, they're looking for people with court of appeals experience because it is courts of appeals where policy is made," end quote. And then she added, and I know this is on tape and I should never say that because we don't make law. I know, I'm not promoting it and I'm not advocating it. It's just where it happens. But you see, the second part of that quote is the right wing thugs are leaving off. They're saying, see, she thinks she's a liberal activist. No, you dumbasses. What she said was on the appeals court level, that's where law seems to be made, and it shouldn't be that way. In other words, she's saying, I'm not that way. Oh, and a top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Jeff Sessions, he had something to say about all this, and we'll share that with you when we come back.
conservatives. Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. So regarding the nomination of Sonia Sotomayor, who is on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals right now, an appeals court judge, and Barack Obama's nomination of her to the Supreme Court, the right wing, of course, is going crazy. Not only are they parsing sentences that have nothing to do with her judicial record. Also, there's an interesting report at the Hill newspaper about how a lot of a lot of Republicans, right-wing nutballs, are talking about her diet, what she eats as a Puerto Rican, her nationality being, well, that's not right, having a Puerto Rican back. I don't know how to define Puerto Rico. I just wish they were a state, but they're not. Her Puerto Rican background. Heritage? Is that what you want me to say? Her culture? Is that like Michigan heritage or Ohio culture?
Well, what are they saying? That she eats too much mofongo or something?
Well, no. They were talking about these right-wingers now. The whisper is that because she eats spicy food, it's going to influence her decisions on the court. And because she eats garbanzo beans and pig's feet, and you know, kind of like soul food, kind of like the stuff, I guess, that Clarence Thomas might have eaten at one point in his life.
But Sarah Palin stood in a church and had some voodoo priest bless her and hope that
I know.
You know, a guy that performs let me Jamaican exorcisms and that's okay.
Yeah, that was okay. Now, the top Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee right now is Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama. He said, now you have to keep something in mind here about Jeff Sessions. Number one, his son bitch can't talk because he's got a mouth full of tongue and teeth, and therefore it's difficult for him to talk. But back in 1998, when Bill Clinton nominated Judge Sotomayor to the appeals court, Jeff Sessions, along with 28 other Republicans, voted no. Because in the first place, it's a woman. And the second place, she's not white. So that was good enough for Jeff back then. It's going to be good enough for him this time, too. But he called her comments regarding a Latina woman having more experience about certain things than white man. He called that troubling. He did. That was his word, troubling. He said, this is what he said on NBC's Today Show today. He said, quote, we need to inquire into that and give her a fair opportunity to explain it. But on its face, that's very troubling. Now, this is a guy. Remember, Jeff Sessions is a guy who said, if you take away the white hoods, he didn't see what the problem was with the Ku Klux Klan. Jeff Sessions defines white, male, southern, lynch 'em all racism. This is what is so disgusting to me about these bastards, the way they raise this issue, because a Latina woman made a statement that is abso-goddamn-lutely true. And then you have people like Jeff Sessions who will think that lynching a Negro on a weeknight might be good fun. You know, I'm just kidding, boys. I don't really mean it. As far as the Conservative Citizens Action Committee down here in Alabama, why, we're just a bunch of boys that like to get together. And remember, you know, the war of northern aggression. The sick son of a bitch. He goes on to say a judge must submit themselves to the law and be faithful to the law and to serve under the law. Now listen, because here comes his big faux pas. That's French. They are not above the law, and I think it's further exacerbated by President Clinton's promise to find someone who will use empathy in making decisions. Hey, Jeff, it's not President Clinton. It's Barack Obama. You dumbass. And I think that is a non-legal standard. Jeff Sessions. You ever seen this guy on television? If you ever get a chance, I'm telling you, don't miss it. Don't miss it. I mean, as far as a racist, dumbass, white man from the South who will probably continue to get elected until hell freezes over because he is a racist, dumbass, white man from the South, if you get my drift. Jeff Sessions defines that. I mean, there he is. Watch him sometime. He does talk like he's got a mouth full of, I don't know, cotton balls or marbles or something like that. Am I mocking the way he talks? You're goddamn right I am. Of course I'm mocking the way he talks. What kind of way to talk is that? Huh? What kind of way is that there to talk? I mean, you think if somebody's going to live in this country, they'd learn how to talk, right?
You're mocking my people.
If I thought these were your people, I would never have married you. Yeah, if you go to Talking Points memo, earlier today, our diligent front page editor, Justin Elliott, picked up on a curious article in The Hill about conservative critics of Supreme Court nominee Sotomayor. As you may have noticed, those critics have repeatedly cited a speech she delivered at Berkeley about a wise Latina woman. The right is, of course, outraged. In the same speech, though, she also got a bit more personal. She said, quote, "For me, a very special part of my being Latina is the mucho platos de arroz, gandoles y pernil, rice, beans, and pork, that I have eaten at countless family holidays and special events," she said. She went on, "My Latina identity also includes, because of my particularly adventurous taste bugs, morcilla, pig intestines, patitas de cerdo con garbanzo, pig's feet with beans, and la lengua y orejas de cuche frito." Good lighthearted fun, right? Wrong. According to Hill reporter Alexander Bolton, quote, "This has prompted some Republicans to muse privately about whether Sotomayor is suggesting that distinctive Puerto Rican cuisine, such as patitas de cerdo con garbanzo, would somehow in some small way influence her verdicts from the bench." Can you believe this? Kurt Levy, the executive director of the Committee for Justice, a neo-Nazi advocacy group, said he wasn't certain whether Sotomayor had claimed her palate would color her view of legal facts, but he said that President Obama's Supreme Court nominee clearly touts her subjective approach in the law. Oh, my God. So do you have it? This is the conservative opposition to Sotomayor. Oh, and by the way, for what it's worth, patitas de cerdo con garbanzo are not pig's tongues and ears. They're pig's feet with chickpeas. And according to Brian Butler, writing at TPM, they're delicious. Oh, my. Oh, my. So they go after what she eats. Now, the Michael in Roswell, who sent this to me, adds, "Yes, indeed, those wild-eyed and wacky right-wingers are implying that Sonia Sotomayor's decisions might well be affected by eating pig's feet and chickpeas. I mean, everybody knows it's all those peppers that those hot-blooded Latina types eat that makes them unpredictable and volatile." Well, Mike writes, "I would hope that anyone in the Supreme Court wouldn't be distracted by gnawing hunger while hearing cases, but that might be the full extent to which I would worry about what goes into a Supreme Court justice's gullet. Unless we're talking about Scalia. In his case, we ought to be keeping a close count of the babies in his neighborhood."
Have you noticed how the right-wingers seem obsessed with what so-called liberals or progressives eat? Do you remember when they attacked John Kerry because he ordered a cheesesteak with Swiss cheese on it? And then they mocked President Obama because he asked if there was spicy mustard available for his hamburger. And now it's like, well, and then you couldn't eat French fries for how many years?
Right.
All right. So what is that? What
they're
is
infantile. No, it's infantile. They're orally fixated. They are infantilized from the moment they are born, right wingers. And they never get beyond it. I mean, you look at the right wing leadership in this country, people like Rush Limbaugh and Newt Gingrich and the rest of these people. They are, figuratively speaking, thumbsuckers. They are infantilized. They think constantly about, except Rush. Rush has this obsession about bending them over and making them grab their ankles. How many times has he talked about that over and over and over again? Well, I'm not going to bend over and grab my ankles for these people. Rush has a thing about, well, you know, let's say his fixation is not oral, it's more anal.
Spread digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jails by conservative Christian, right-wing Republican, straight white American males.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Yeah, okay. Did you go to MikeMalloy.com? Did you get into the chat room? Huh? You can, you know, if you're a subscriber, right? And that only costs you 25 cents a program. Not bad. Oh, by the way, the phone number here is 877-996-2556. Got a couple open lines, so I guess people are getting tired of holding on. 877-996-2556. We'll take the calls when we come back after the break at the top of the hour. This is from Tom, who writes, Mike, oh, this is about the first story we talked about, this horrific suicide wave that seems to be sweeping through the Army and the Marine Corps. Dear Mike, after the Vietnam War, I worked at the VA. I worked at an agency that reviewed appeals of adverse veteran disability determinations by VA regional offices. I worked in one of the sections that specialized in PTSD. I reviewed hundreds of psychiatric cases, many PTSD, many not. I can tell you that it is reckless to keep those diagnosed with symptoms of PTSD in the armed forces. Intrusive recollections of combat stressors, like exposure to incidents causing or threatening death, occur daily in military life. I saw one case where a survivor of combat, upon being forced to go to the gun range, attacked his commander and was sentenced to 10 years at Fort Leavenworth after a court-martial. Years later, the VA service connected him for chronic delayed post-traumatic stress disorder after re-characterizing his dishonorable discharge. It is a terribly cruel act to return a soldier suffering from PTSD to combat. It is cruel not to give him a disability discharge, to remove him from an environment which does nothing but provoke intrusive recollections of combat. It is medical malpractice, in my opinion, to avoid giving the diagnosis where it is warranted by the symptoms and combat duty. It is further malpractice to drug the patient and maintain he is fit for duty. Sincerely, Tom. Yeah, that last bit, you're aware. What did I read the other day? Fully, was it 30%, 40%, or maybe only 20% of U.S. troops in Iraq are on medication? What do you call them? What do you call, like, sedatives for sleep and methamphetamines or in that class during the day. We have a narcotized army. I mean, You know, am I right that methamphetamine was developed by the Japanese during World War II in order to sustain their troops and to give the kamikaze pilots the mental disturbances that would allow them to fly their airplanes into U.S. Navy ships? But I think methamphetamine, am I right? I don't know. I think it was. That whole class of drugs were developed by... or was developed by Japanese scientists, doctors. I guess you could make an argument for using drugs on people who are involved in combat, I guess, especially if their goal is to defeat an enemy who threatens to invade or otherwise the United States or to invade our allies, such as what happened with the Nazis or with the Japanese in World War II. But to drug up our soldiers in order to cover symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder so that they can be returned to combat and the drugs continue. What do you call that? What do you call that? What do you call doing that to young American men and women? What do you call that? Huh? I've mentioned this movie before that you might want to see. It's called Jacob's Ladder. If you haven't seen Jacob's Ladder, it will give you a pretty good idea of how drugs in combat will affect a soldier. It is one of the more frightening movies I've ever seen. And you know, it's just a film. It's just a movie. It's not a documentary or anything. Who's the guy who's in it? Tim Robbins is the star. If you get a chance ever, Jacob's Ladder, take a look at that movie. Gordon in Big Fork, Montana writes, torture works. The best proof that torture works can be found in The Witchcraft Sourcebook by Brian Levesque, published in 2004. It is an anthology of writings documenting the foundation of witchcraft and witches. From 1450 through 1750, volumes of documentations were produced containing incredibly detailed reports concerning the practice of witchcraft. This information was obtained from confessions using enhanced interrogation, simulated drowning. In other words, waterboarding was a favorite technique. This resulted in the prosecution of about 100,000 witches, quote, quote, during this 300-year period. I'm sure former Vice President Cheney would agree that this was necessary to protect society from, quote, the threat of catastrophic violence, end quote. At the time, all necessary and appropriate force, quote, quote, was used to, quote, save lives, end quote. This included unpleasant things, such as simulated drowning. But ultimately, it resulted in proving beyond a doubt that witches indeed existed and were actively practicing witchcraft to the detriment of society. Thanks to the dedication of officials at the time, this threat was eliminated. I assume former Vice President Cheney would be as proud of that era of government vigilance as he is of his own. Gordon in Big Fort, Montana. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down.
Welcome back. It is just about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. Manuel, who is a Puerto Rican living in Moore Park, California, emails in, Mike, I was just driving home listening and drooling when you describe arroz con gandules, whatever. It is delicious. By the way, your average Puerto Rican food is not spicy, just tasty. Yeah, we were there. When were we there? September? Last September? We went to Puerto Rico and went to Vieques and... the food was incredible. We stopped at what were those little places called along the beach there? Those little huts.
Oh, I can't remember. All those little, they were little seaside. It was the town Luquillo, and
is it right along the road outside? About 30 miles from San Juan, but it was certainly not a resort area. We didn't do any resorts.
No, but it was fish that they had
just pulled out of the ocean,
and pork on sticks and rice and meatballs. And,
Molly sat there and just
and they had the coconuts where they sliced the top off the coconut and stuck the straw in it, basically.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And when we were on Vieques, we stopped at these mom and pop places along the side of the road. This one was it a Sunday, I think, and they just set up like you see here in the South. They just a family will set up a cooker.
Oh, right.
And a couple of tables.
That's the best guacamole I've had in my entire life. Of course, where we were staying, you could just grab avocados out of the tree. I'm getting so hungry.
But the Puerto Rican food, what I noticed when we were there, no, it's not the least bit spicy. We kept having to ask for Horacha sauce or something.
Well, I kept asking for jalapeno peppers. I love spicy food, so right. I'd make a lousy judge.
So you would. Not only do these dumbass Republicans constantly attack people for things like the food they eat or comparisons they might make between the Latina experience and the Blanco experience. To go after people for the food they eat and to get it all wrong to begin with. Puerto Rican food, at least to us when we were there, it's not the least bit spicy. As a matter of fact, it was kind of, I don't want to say bland. It was not. It was very interesting food.
And
very,
they had
very good.
Really good pastries. We had some kind of something called leche, some pastry with a cream cheese I'm getting so hungry. I'm on a low-carb diet, guys, because, it's bathing suit season, and I'm low-carbonate, and I'm just starving. I've been eating celery and wood chips, and it's just, I'm so hungry. I got to stop talking about it.
Email here from Romulan. He says, the subject line, only whites are racist. I'd made that statement earlier in the program. Romulan writes, years back when I attended Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church in South Central L.A. with a girl I wanted to get close to, I faced, if not racism, then something very much like it, both in and around the church. I've even faced the same non-racist, in italics, attitudes dating Asian, Hispanic, Jewish, and Native American girls. Not a problem with the things I did or how I treated their daughter or sister, but the color of my skin and their fear that I might have children of mixed heritage with their daughter or their sister. One parent even commented that she preferred that her daughter dated a drunk of her own race than with me. If that isn't racist, then could you please explain what it is? That's called prejudice. Prejudice is an attitude. Racism is institutionalizing that prejudice. There is a difference. All you need to do is understand the terms. Of course you were being prejudiced against, but you were not being slammed with racism. The prejudice comes from, prejudice means, it means to prejudge. They were prejudging you based on what white people or Gentiles or whatever, a group was showing their prejudice to you when you were trying to date all these women. But that's called prejudice. Racism is something that is institutionalized. Racism is found in the way laws are enforced or not enforced. Racism is found in the way people are drafted into the military and then segregated into units that only contain one race. Racism is denying people the right to vote based on their skin color. Racism is telling people that because of their skin color, they have to sit in the back of the bus or in the balcony of the theater, or they can't get in the door to begin with. Okay? Do you understand now? Okay, good. I'm glad you wrote to me and asked me about it, because I can certainly answer that for you. To your phone calls. Mike is calling from upstate New York, listening on Sirius. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
No, I'm barely hear you.
Well, I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, what I wanted to bring up was, I wanted to get your take on a scenario. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Okay, you're involved in a game of life, and before you interrupt me, let me finish. You're involved in a game of life, which if you don't win this game, that your life, your liberty, your happiness, your family, and everything that you have is gone. Now, in playing that game, there are rules that are supposed to be played in this game, but the opposing team is not playing by the rules, and the rules are not enforced.
Okay. Mike?
By the referees, what do you do?
Mike, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Am I the little blue
No, you do know what I'm talking about.
Am I the little blue?
It's called war. It's called terrorism. Now, what are you going to do? You tell me.
What are you talking about?
Exactly what the United States is going through.
And what is that?
With the Taliban, with Hamas,
how many countries do not abide by the rules,
and then we're supposed to abide by the.
How many Taliban or Hamas exist in Iraq, Mike? Now, I put you on hold because you're one of these motor mouth right wingers who couldn't find his ass with both hands. You don't know what you're talking about. I asked you a couple of times to explain it, and all you want to do is go on and on. So I'm just going to hang up on you. I don't need this kind of garbage. In the first place, you don't have a clue what Hamas is, where it came from, or where it even exists. Because, Mike, we are not fighting Hamas. The Israelis are. That's A. B, there is no Taliban in Iraq. Taliban, Mike, is in Afghanistan, and Taliban is something we created. It used to be called the Northern Alliance. Now, Mike, word of advice, don't call a program where the host is 1,000 times smarter than you are, because it only gets embarrassing if you have any of your friends or family listening. Go away, Mike. Call Limbaugh. You'll fit right in. Oh, my God. David is calling from Harrisburg, PA. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I'm afraid I have called a program where the host is 1,000 times smarter than me. At any rate, you were absolutely correct about the methamphetamine.
Yeah.
Methamphetamine was developed by the Japanese and was given to them in sake before they were left off, unbeknownst to them, to fly a plane into a structure or a, you know.
Well, actually, it was, you know, this is coming up for some reason tonight, but crystal meth, which is short for methamphetamine, of course, it was developed. Yes, it was developed by the Japanese, but it was developed in 1893. It was first developed from ephedrine. We all know what ephedrine is.
Mm-hmm.
And a chemist by the name of I've got it right in front of me. Nagayoshi Nagai was responsible for this creation. It wasn't until 1919 that methamphetamine was turned into its crystallized form by Akira Ogata. Ogata was able to do this by reduction of ephedrine using iodine and red phosphorus, blah, 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 blah. Amphetamine, which is a related drug, first came into existence in 1887 by a Lazar Edenlanu in Germany. Methamphetamine manufacture initially began in the United States in Hawaii in the 1960s. So the origins of speed is it's a Japanese drug. I don't know why it was developed in 1898 or 1899. I don't know what the point was. I guess the Japanese weren't involved then, were they, in conquest in the Far East? So I don't know what it was. Hey, let me put you on hold a second, David. I'll come back because I used up your time here. We got a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 21 past the hour, we were talking with David in Harrisburg, PA. All right, where were we?
Well, I had originally called in. I wanted to discuss our judiciary's diet. We're saying that it doesn't impact what's eaten, that's not important. I'm thinking that garbanzo beans and rice seem to be a pretty good diet.
Yeah.
Considering that 8 years ago, our Supreme Court decided that we wouldn't count the votes because it would be bad for the country. Maybe they just don't have the ability. They're eating junk food, you know, maybe they're eating fast food or chips or soda pop or something, and it's just addled their brain. And they can't make, you know, the neurotransmitters that are needed to make good decisions.
Well, that's certainly a possibility, David.
I'm just thinking that, you know, some garbanzo beans are high in protein.
Yeah.
That's good for us.
Yeah, sure.
Might be a good addition. Maybe we should have started this a long time ago.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe we should be paying attention to judicial diet.
Thanks much, Mike.
Okay, appreciate you checking in. Take care, David. Steve is calling from Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Yes, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Great to get on the phone with you. Busy signals over the years here.
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, not a problem. It's actually good to hear that people are calling in.
Oh, yeah.
Regarding the diet, I love Dave just before. I've had an epiphany. I'm in Austin, Texas. And born and raised in Texas, and I like beans and rice and spicy food. And it's like, oh my God, I'm a Latino.
Well, you are.
Big surprise to my deceased parents and the doctor who signed the birth certificate, but
yeah,
doggone it.
Well, you are what you eat. there's no question. But if you're if you're a Latino, you know, good for you. I don't know. I don't know. I guess I fluctuate. I go from being Greek to Italian to sometimes Filipino. A lot of times a Mexican or very often a Brazilian. We have not far from where we live. There is a Brazilian restaurant. I didn't know there was Brazilian cuisine. Suffice it to say, it is mostly meat, but it's very good, very well done meat. For people who are not meat eaters, a Brazilian restaurant is not where you want to go. But
I
have yet to come across, I don't think, a specific cuisine that I don't like, except as you pointed out, and last caller pointed out, American junk food diet, which is horrifying. It's just horrifying.
Right.
It's interesting when people come here, when tourists come here and they want American cuisine, what is that? You know, you and I know, and most people know, you go to a different country, there is a cuisine that is identified with that country, but you know, Canada's the same way. What the hell is Canadian cuisine? What is American cuisine? Since both countries, I think, I'm going to get lots of emails if this is not true. I think both countries are very much immigrant countries. They were established by people who came there from other places. So
right.
So there's no I can't think of American cuisine. Honest to God, I can't. Hot dogs?
No. Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, yeah. National Lampoon did a parody on that, oh, God, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, whatever.
I think I saw that issue. But
yeah, it's like Cheese Whiz and Ritz and
right.
That's about it.
Don't forget Freedom Fries.
Right, Freedom Fries. Yes. Oh, well, great to hear from you.
All right.
Kudos to the person who does your bumper music.
That would be Kathy.
I suspect as much. And she sounds as lovely on the phone as she does on the radio.
Yeah, thank God for that, right?
Yeah.
All right.
You have a great night.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Take care. Wait a minute. What did he say? You sound as slutty on the phone as you do on the radio.
Sounds like some of your hate mail, which, by the way, there will be a new Malloy video hate mail coming up later this week.
Steve is one of your number one fans.
I know.
All right. We are getting close enough to a break that I guess we ought to just hold off here. What else have we got? One more thing that I want to toss into the mix when we come back about, this is from Ross' story a couple of days ago. John Byrne wrote it. Secret memo reveals that Bush was given a humane legal alternative to harsh interrogation. They were offered a choice on how to extract information from so-called detainees. And Bush, with Dick Cheney's hand up his ass, manipulating his mouth, said, no, let's go for the torture. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. This is the Malloy program. Who could this be? Marge is calling from Maryville, Indiana. Hey, Marge.
Greetings.
Hi, how are you?
Pissed off.
Uh-oh, now what?
Well, it didn't happen to me, but it happened to a couple women.
Okay.
And that's what really, you know, I've been there, done that, got the freaking T-shirt.
Yeah.
And it really gets my goat. You remember the two ladies that had the radio show on WGN in the morning, Kathy and Judy?
Oh, yeah, I remember that show.
Well, hot damn. They both got canned Friday. It was one of those business decisions. Does that sort of ring a bell?
Well, I got fired from WLS, WGN's competition, because I was too dark and liberal.
Oh, well, let me explain something to you, my friend.
Yeah?
These are two women. They're both in their 60s.
Yeah?
And in the last election, they were very open.
Right.
And very active.
Right.
And even talked about going over to Iowa a couple times, supporting the Obama election.
Uh-huh.
Well, hot damn, it was a business decision that their services were no longer needed after 20 years of successfully leading their time slot.
Right. Well, you know, the radio is not a there is no loyalty in radio from management or the ownership to,
you know what?
Loyalty.
Oh, yeah, okay.
To the talent. That's one of the reasons, and that's not because radio is populated by evil bastards. It's just,
really?
It just doesn't exist. Oh, there are some evil bastards. Oh yeah. Oh my God. I worked for one at WLS, and for one at WSB here in Atlanta. But, there's no loyalty. Most AM radio stations now, are losing audience. Just unbelievably so, because people are just like newspapers, just like magazines. It is happening. There's no way to deny it. So what a lot of radio stations in certain markets are doing is just looking for the shock talk jocks. And those two women were not that.
Oh, I don't know. On Wednesdays, they had Speak Your Piece. They had half an hour where you could call up and say anything you wanted.
Ooh.
You know, bitch about whatever, whoever, you know, that got you ticked off.
Ooh.
Oh, you're going to like this. On Thursdays, we had Sex Thursdays.
Sex Thursdays.
Yeah, you could call up and talk about, you know, where was the strangest place you ever did it? Did you ever get hurt? Some of those days were kind of funny.
Yeah, but they weren't shock jocks. Shock jocks weren't jocks. Well, right, but they're Jills, shock Jills. What shock radio does is see how many times they can say caca and poo-poo and avoid the censors and
do... I thought that was against the rules.
Well,
to say caca and poo-poo.
Well, it it may be, but
I mean, otherwise you had to pay a big fine.
Rules are to be broken.
Oh.
Well, whatever.
Oh, I'm telling
Well,
you.
I'm sad to hear that Foofy and Kathy are gone. What are their names?
Kathy O'Malley and Judy Markey.
Kathy and Judy, right. That they're not there. That was a good program. It was.
It was.
And who replaces them?
Beats the hell out of me. Some guy that claims to be a news junkie.
Ooh.
Yeah, and if you believe that, I got a bridge I'll sell you cheap.
I hear you.
While we're speaking about broadcast in Chicago, what was the guy that did the politics on Channel 7? Was it Andy Shaw?
That sounds familiar.
Okay, whatever his name is. Tall, skinny guy.
Yeah.
He retired at the end of the year and went away on a vacation, nice leisurely vacation.
Yeah.
Guess what he came back as, effective, I think, next month?
A woman.
No. Not that big of a change.
Oh.
He's going to be the director of the Better Government Association. You like that?
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, but it would have been more interesting if Andy would have come back a woman.
Well, yeah, maybe. Oh, man. And then we're saying that a Latina woman's experience is, you know, better than a white man's experience. And the mouth from the South says that that's racist.
Yes.
He's such a jackrabbit.
He is a jerk. He is. All right. I have a couple of guys who want to make a comment about what you've said. So let me put you on hold.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Marge. Behave yourself. Dave is calling from Chicago. Hey, Dave.
What's happening, Mike?
You are.
Yeah. I thought the word that you were looking for was psychotropic drugs that were given our guys suicidal tendencies. I thought that was what you were looking for.
Well, no, that's what the movie Jacob's Ladder is about. But the drugs that those are mind altering drugs. What we are giving our soldiers now are drugs that keep them alert and awake when they are desperately tired, and makes them sedated when they have a break and can get some sleep. We jack them up and jack them down. We jack them up again. But the psychotropic drugs, the mind-altering drugs, those were the experiments that were done in Vietnam, and they were done using drugs that completely altered perception. The idea behind some of these experiments was to make American soldiers so aggressive, they would have hallucinations that could only be answered through just unstoppable aggression is what they were looking for. Soldiers that would burst into Vietnamese villages and without a single hesitation slaughter everyone there, because the soldier was not slaughtering human beings. The drug was telling him that he was slaughtering 2-foot-high demons that were erupting out of a hole that went straight down to hell. And the soldier could see the fire in their eyes and see their scaly skin and their long fingernails and their horns. So obviously he's going to kill the demons that are erupting out of a hole that went down to hell, when in fact what he was killing were Vietnamese civilians who were trying to get away from him. That kind of experience. That's what the movie, Jacob's Ladder. And I'm telling you, man, get it. It's one of the scariest damn movies I think I've ever seen. It is just beyond belief. You need to try. If you got the courage to watch it, it'll give you chills. I swear to God, it'll give you chills. Make the hair on the back of your neck just curl up.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out. I've got a bad echo back on this phone.
All right. Well, listen, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Sometimes the connections really suck. Thanks, Dave. Dwayne is calling from Sholo, Arizona. Is that right, Sholo?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's a long story about how I got its name, so I'm not going to bore you with that.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that.
Are you getting an echo?
No, I'm not.
Okay, I can put up with it.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to wax a little bit pedantic, and I'll get off of it as quick as possible. This confusion about
amphetamine and methamphetamine and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Nowadays, whenever anybody hears the word amphetamine, they automatically think methamphetamine, crazy making stuff that everybody's cooking in their own kitchen.
Right.
The original amphetamines, I don't know when the first uppers, as they were slangily called, came into being. You had some history there. I thought they came out of Europe, but they were heavily prescribed during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and early 70s as appetite suppressants.
Right.
They would do two things. They would stop your appetite, and they would keep you awake for as long as you were taking them. But when they wore off, you didn't drop like you'd been taking Bennies or anything. Truckers knew about these things. You just normally got tired and slowed down, and if you were, you know, you'd go home and go to bed. And college students used them by the bushels, and that's where I got into it. And I never had an illegal prescription because a prescription was easy enough to get from your doctor. The only bad thing about them was somebody with high blood pressure or a tendency in that direction, it would aggravate the blood pressure. So these pilots that are currently still being afforded these things, they don't have anything much to worry about because they're not going to get hooked on them. They're not addicting, and they do keep the guys alert. They don't. There's nothing hallucinatory about them, and they will allow a guy to stay up past his normal hours and function very quickly because you are alert. As I wrote many, many papers when I was up on these things, staying awake, you know, not getting enough sleep while I was carrying a heavy load in college. And the only time I ever heard anybody getting a buzz off of these things was some of the athletes that I, you know, gave some to. Huh? Some of those guys thought they were getting a buzz. All it was doing was bringing them up to a normal state of awakeness, and they thought this was a high. You know, some of the jocks were like that. But the guys on flight status with the military, if they have high blood pressure, they don't have flight status, and they don't have anything to worry about. As long as they, you know, anybody can go off the deep end on anything and overdo it, but there's no enticement to. They aren't pleasant. They don't make you. They don't give you a buzz. They don't make you want to take more unless you just have to stay awake, and that's all there is to that. I had to quit using them because I developed high blood pressure, but I was also out of school, so it didn't matter.
Okay. All right, listen.
That's basically it.
Wait, Dwayne. I'm sorry. I've got to break here. We're flat out of time. Appreciate what you had to say, though. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. Program. Birch, Enberg, Alexander, Wolf, Malloy, and Bay. A couple of quick emails. Kathy in Green Bay writes, "What I don't understand about Judge Sotomayor's critics is how they can say the things that they do and not cringe at their own words. Apparently, even they don't listen to themselves, because if they did, they'd never open their mouths again." Yeah, the insults, the incredible things that these rat bastards say is pretty unbelievable. Yeah, I got a couple of emails. That last caller sounded like he was a speed junkie to begin with. I completely disagree with that. I experimented with methamphetamines back in the day, and they are highly addictive. Now, there's a qualifier on that. There are a lot of things that people can use that they do not become addicted to. For example, I can drink alcohol, and the idea of becoming an alcohol addict is just off the table for me. when I did do these amphetamine-like drugs, they were very addictive. The production, I found out later, the production of dopamine inside my brain, which was a direct result of the use of these drugs. And they bypass the usual channels. When you do methamphetamine or any of these speed drugs, the dopamine that is released in your brain doesn't come from actual, pleasurable experience. These molecules, I'm going to get this all wrong, but the molecules move in a way that bypasses the normal channels in your neurological system that would release dopamine. As a result, you get a high immediately, and the high is maintainable for a while, and then you start to crash. And memory kicks in, remembers the high. Back in the day, we used to call it chasing the high. You could sit there and do lines of meth or coke or whatever until hell froze over and never get the same feeling that you got at the very beginning. But in the meantime, yeah, you remember back in the hippie days, there's an expression, speed kills. I've seen autopsy pictures of people who were in their 30s, died of a massive coronary from the overuse of speed. Autopsy pictures would show their organs, their internal organs, look like the internal organs of people in their 80s. Speed is incredibly addictive. I didn't want to get into an argument with somebody who's listening to an echo on the phone, but to say that methamphetamine or amphetamines or any of those amphetamine-like drugs are not addictive is kind of not true. I don't want to characterize or mischaracterize his comments. Maybe they weren't addictive for him. But if you were around in the 60s and the 70s and the 50s, you remember Christmas trees and white crosses and black beauties and so on and so forth. And they were amazing little drugs. And yeah, they were used by mostly middle-class women in the 50s. They were prescribed by doctors, amphetamines, for weight reduction, because it does kill your appetite. But as far as not being addictive, that's absolutely not the case. Amphetamines are incredibly addictive. Speed kills. And in the 80s, I watched a number of friends, like I'm sure a lot of people listening to this program watch the same thing, a number of friends run their businesses, their homes, their cars, and their marriages right up their noses until there was nothing left. And it was really, really sad to watch. I've watched people who become so addicted to cocaine, or what passed as cocaine. You know, half of it was crystal meth and half of it was coke. And some of it was baby laxative, baby laxative, or powdered sugar, whatever. It depended on who you got it from. But I watched a lot of people do this and go from being normal human beings to people who were dedicated to one thing and one thing only, and that was pursuit of more speed-like drugs, whether it was coke or meth or whatever, diet pills, black beauties. It didn't make any difference. So yeah, they are very, very, very addictive. Can these drugs be used by college students and they use it specifically for certain periods of time? Sure, of course they can. Of course they can. Just like some people can drink alcohol. Some people can smoke a cigarette a week. Some people can, I've watched people come back from heroin addiction. The addictive type of body chemistry is not necessarily the same for everybody. I certainly admit that. But a general statement about meth or any of these speed drugs is that these drugs were, and still are, highly addictive. I mean, look at the experiments done with cocaine and monkeys in the lab. The monkeys would hit the lever to get the coke and forget their children. Or not their children, but their offspring, the baby monkeys. They didn't care anymore. As far as grooming or feeding or taking care of their offspring, no, just give me the coke. Okay, those were monkeys. But you've read stories, horror stories, about humans who do the same thing. So with whatever amount of respect is demanded here, I respectfully disagree with the caller. Speed, meth, coke, crank, crack, ice, all of it is one of the most highly addictive substances you can possibly come in contact with, kind of like nicotine. Okay. Oh, yeah, I didn't even look here. Dr. Sachs writes, that guy sounded like a speed junkie. Speed is not safe, and it affects everyone's chemistry differently. And that's just what I just said. Increases heart rate, can lead to paranoia and schizophrenia. Speed makes you feel wired, like you've just drunk 5 cups of coffee. And crank is a whole other story. Could be cool for a while, like most drugs, then you pay the guy at the door for your usage. There are no drugs you can take without paying a toll. I'm abbreviating, of course. I remember a phrase, speed kills. Dr. Sachs, I remember the same. We're on the same page, pal. Thanks for hanging out tonight. Appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night if you can make it, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Provider and licensing.